When the global pandemic hit, the first thing Benjamin Grosvenor did was something he has never done before. He's a professional classical pianist, and he decided to step away from his instrument to see what it would feel like. Well, what he discovered was he really does need the piano. So when he returned, one of the first things he did was make a new recording that honors his late grandfather. It celebrates the music of Franz Liszt. That's what we're exploring this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mucker. Benjamin, there's certainly been a lot going on in the past 11 months or so. I'm wondering, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm here in London. We're locked down here at the moment, so there's not much to do other than be in the house. It's a little harder this time around with it winter, not being able to spend so much time outside. It's been a bizarre year with some, you know, the concerts that did happen were all the more joyous for it, I suppose. But obviously it's been very difficult with all the cancellations and all of the isolation at home. I've tried to make the most of it as best as I can.
I was wondering what your diary looks like these days. I know you did have at least one recital planned that I know was rescheduled. Are there any other performances coming up on the horizon?
I did have quite a lot in the States this season, and sadly I'm not going to be able to come for a lot of that. Right now everything is just quite unclear as to what will be the next thing. It looks like at the beginning of March I'll have a couple of streamed concerts. I have a residency in Paris with the radio there, and it looks like I might be able to go there with a period of quarantine before the rehearsals at the beginning of March. So I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, everything, sort of things are changing still quite last minute. So we'll see.
Some positive things have come out of the dark days of the pandemic for you. And one is that you created a chamber music festival with a friend of yours, a violinist, who also happened to be your neighbor. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, well, the first lockdown, I just got frustrated with this strange online-only existence that we were living. And when it looked like things were beginning to ease and the concerts might be able to happen again, I had the idea with my neighbor of putting together a chamber music festival where we're based in southeast London, and we organized the concerts at a local church, which is maybe 5 minutes from my house. And my friend, my girlfriend, who's also a violinist, and I did it between the three of us and sort of everything. So it was exciting and interesting experience and a very rewarding one. We had four concerts in this mini festival that we did, and with a small socially distanced audience for each one, and it felt like a great positive thing to build out of all this, and something that I hope will continue in the future as an annual thing.
So would that be in the fall then, something you're thinking about in September?
Yes, yeah, so we're planning for this September as well.
I know one of the other things that you enjoy doing when you're not making music is cooking. So I'm curious, have you discovered any new recipes or things that have become a specialty for you?
Well, my girlfriend is Korean, so we cook a lot of Korean food, and which is fantastic. I mean, I love it. Sort of through my relationship with her, I sort of widened my palate to all these wonderful exotic and spicy foods. So we've been in enjoying things like that. And lately, I've got quite lazy with the cooking, to be honest. I need to get my creativity back again. But I've done things like make pies, and that, you know, it's the kind of thing that is a little time consuming, and you normally wouldn't have time for it in your daily life. So, and a few interesting culinary experiments along the way.
You've also been listening to a lot of recordings. What have you been listening to most recently?
Most recently, I haven't listened to many recordings, actually, but what I have been doing is just simply sight reading random repertoire at the piano, which, strangely, is something I don't find myself doing often enough. I mean, I'm always thinking, I must learn this piece, I must learn that piece. But the idea of sort of creating your own musical jukebox by just picking out a score and putting it on the stand and reading it through. In the last weeks, I've been finding great pleasure in that, actually, and I've probably been doing that more than I have been listening to recordings.
What's been on your music stand?
Actually, I mean, the most recent thing is nothing terribly unusual. I've just been sight reading through Chopin Nocturnes. I mean, I played some of them, but not all of them. And the ones I haven't played, I've just been enjoyed reading. I've enjoyed very much reading through.
Your latest recording celebrates the great Romantic pianist and composer Franz Liszt. And I know you have a personal connection to this composer, and it relates to your grandfather. How did he inspire you to enjoy the music of Liszt?
Well, my grandfather was an amateur pianist. He wanted to be a concert pianist when he was a child, but sadly didn't have the parental support, and became an accountant. But he passed on music to my mother, who became a music and piano teacher, and she then taught me to play. And a lot of my formative musical experiences involved him. I mean, he would take me to concerts in London. We lived about 30 miles from London. We'd go into London to hear people like Stephen Hough and Yevgeny Kissin play. And he introduced me to some wonderful recordings and wonderful music. And perhaps two of the first composers I became exposed to were Chopin and Liszt. And Liszt, for him, was one of his real heroes, perhaps his favorite composer. Introduced me to pieces like, I think the first piece I heard was the famous Lieber Straum, and it went from there, really. And, I mean, he passed away at the beginning of last year, so I thought sort of to mark the bizarre year that had happened, it might be a nice idea to record a CD of Liszt as a tribute to him, but also sort of a tribute to, you know, my own musical lineage. And, you know, Liszt is sort of the ultimate composer in that respect. I mean, every modern pianist, we sort of look back to him. He had such a great influence on everything that followed.
Do you remember why your grandfather loved Liszt so much?
I suppose, you know, my grandfather was just fascinated by him as a human being. I mean, I recently inherited some wonderful biographies from him by Alan Walker. And, you know, he would read these things, and he was a member of the Liszt Society and would get the journals from them, all these interesting essays that they had. So I think just, you know, the richness of Liszt as a human being was something that was interesting to him. Speaking for myself, Liszt is just such a fascinating musician. He had so many facets to him. I mean, we all are familiar with his virtuoso works, I suppose, things like the Hungarian Rhapsodies. But what was remarkable about Liszt is how innovative he was sort of all the way through his life. Obviously, the sonata, which I've recorded on the CD, was a very forward-thinking work and not quite understood when it was written. But even when he was an old man, you know, he was writing pieces which looked forward to the next century, experimenting with atonality and writing works that really looked forward to Impressionism. And a hugely generous spirit and individual. I mean, with his support of other composers, with his charity.
The sonata in B minor is the centerpiece of this recording. What makes it such a masterwork? What's unique about this piece that really sets it apart?
Well, it's unique in its construction and his approach to the form. I mean, it's one long stretch, I suppose. I mean, you can discuss how it's divided into movements, but the what point is, you can't listen to the second movement of the piece because it doesn't make sense without what comes before it. So one piece of a stretch of half an hour built from these motivic cells that we hear within about the first minute. And he transforms these in so many wonderful ways. I mean, that I guess that's what's really unique about the piece from an academic standpoint. But it's a piece of immense drama and lyricism and emotional power. It's just it's a hugely powerful journey with these amazing contrasts between, I guess, the diabolical and the divine in a way. It's a kind of devilish character that always comes back among these moments of spirituality. I mean, it's a sort of wild ride, this piece. It takes you in so many different places through the span of half an hour.
Is there a section, perhaps, in each of the movements that you'd really like us to listen to that's just so special about that movement that you want to make sure we don't miss it?
I think maybe the most emotive, moving part is the end of the slow movement. From starting with something which is quite simple and chorale-like. To this ecstatic climax with the restatement of the theme with which that movement begins. And then dies away into this wonderful section of sort of chains of pearls. These ascending and descending scales, which are all marked PPP. It's a magical moment of colour and mystery. Then the fugue that follows it is a sort of masterstroke. With many composers, you sense at the point where composition could start to sag, it's always a good idea to put in a fugue. There's something about, the way the counterpoint works that brings it alive in such a wonderful way and begins this, last movement, which builds in drama. Until finally the lyrical material comes back again.
If you could ask Liszt anything about this work, what would you ask him?
Well, I suppose, there's always this question about whether there are programmatic elements behind the piece. And I don't think you necessarily need them to understand it, but I would like to know whether he did have anything in mind. The one that makes most sense, I suppose, is the idea that it is a representation of the story of Faust, with the theme sort of being different characters from that tale. And so I'd ask him that. I also might ask him I think it was a masterstroke to end the piece in the way he did, but originally he ended it with a very climactic, virtuoso ending. At what point did he decide to go in a different direction with that and write this miraculous coda that dies away to such a special place?
I want to talk about the other pieces that are on the recording now. Lys Berceuse, which is basically a lullaby, was written the same year as his sonata, and it's a very delicate piece, at least in your hands. How do you approach this lullaby when you sit down to play it?
Well, I think this is a fascinating piece and a kind of hidden gem in his repertoire. I think it's slightly underplayed and underrecorded, but it's, I think, clearly influenced by the Chopin Berceuse. Now, I just say that there were two versions of this, and I played the second version. The first version is much more simplistic and, for me, less interesting. But the second version, the influence by the Chopin Berceuse in its key, in its use of this tonic pedal that goes almost through the piece, and these sections of beautiful filigree. But is a much darker nocturnal vision than the Chopin berceuse. The delicate sections alternate with sections which are much more troubled. And it builds over the course of 8 minutes or so to this ecstatic climax. It dies away in the most beautiful way with this sort of pulsating descent. It's a piece of mystery and kind of ecstasy and sensuality, which I think is really wonderful.
Franz Liszt was known for taking literary works and then turning them into beautiful musical works, and he does that with three sonnets on this recording, which he transcribed. Can you talk about what makes these three pieces unique and what inspired them?
Well, they were inspired by the poetry of Petrarch, who was a 14th century poet. They're love poems, essentially. Liszt was obviously very interested in these. He wrote them initially as songs and later revised them as the instrumental pieces that are on this disc. I mean, they're pieces which stand alone without the poetry to fire the imagination, but if you look at the poetry, it's fascinating to see how Liszt paints this at the piano. I mean, each inhabits its own world. I suppose each is a sort of different vision of love. In the second 104, the poem has all these violent oxymorons, and we hear that in the intense drama of the music. I mean, it can be mysterious, but it builds to this incredibly impassioned climax. The third 1-2-3 is this sort of tender, reverential vision of love, and it's incredibly intimate. Sometimes just at a whisper, but again builds to a very impassioned place. Yeah, the beautiful pieces that stand on their own without the poetry, but it's just fascinating to see how Liszt treats that material.
Liszt was certainly a showman when it came to performing in particular, and he loved to dazzle the audience, and there is an opportunity for you to do the same on this recording with his fantasy on Bellini's Norma.
What's really interesting about all of Liszt's operatic transcriptions is that he had this remarkable gift of taking an opera, you know, music of 2 hours, 3 hours in length, and summarising it into 15 minutes. But by doing so, creating his own incredibly compelling narrative and musical tapestry. And I think Norma is one of the finest examples of that. He takes part of the beginning of opera, part of the middle, part of the end, essentially, but the way that he joins his materials together and the way that he paints the textures that he does at the piano, you know, taking music that is quite orchestral and bringing these sonorities from the piano. It is marvellous, and that's what makes it such a joy to play. I mean, there's so much to explore in that and so many colours to draw out.
You close out the recording with a charming encore, Ave Maria, and its Liszt transcription of Schubert's familiar work. Why was this the best way to wrap up the recording?
Again, personal significance. It was actually the request for my grandfather. He wanted this played at his funeral, which couldn't happen because of the lockdown. I mean, that's why it's there. But in at the same time, it makes a perfect encore after Norma, which is such a big boned piece. And this piece inhabits obviously such an intimate world. It's a very familiar melody, but it's also masterfully constructed and very difficult to play. It's a piece that is much harder than it sounds. And it obviously shouldn't sound difficult if the pianist plays it well. But the fact is, through the whole piece, you have to navigate this three-handed effect where the right and left hand have accompaniment at the same time as both of them playing the tune in the middle. And to invest it with colour and balance and shape is challenging.
What did you learn about yourself in the past year that maybe has surprised you?
Well, the first thing I did, what I decided to do when this first hit, is I decided not to play the piano for a month and a half, just because I'd never done that before and I wanted to see what it was like. So I thought, well, I'll have that time off and I'll see how it affects me. And, you know, I read and watched Netflix and enjoyed time in my garden. But at some point I realized that I needed to go back to the piano again. And I suppose, you know, I always sort of knew that it was something I needed in my life. But I think having had that time away from it, I sort of know it even more.
Benjamin Grosvenor, exploring the music of Franz Liszt. Special thanks to Valerie Kaler, the producer of New Classical Tracks. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it. Help spread the word and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. And since you're clearly a music fan, let me tell you about another podcast you might enjoy. It's called The Piano Puzzler. Each week, host Fred Child invites composer Bruce Adolph into the studio to play one of his brilliant musical mind games. Bruce takes a familiar tune and disguises it in the style of a classical composer. Then a contestant calls in to try to solve the riddle. It's a lot of fun. If you think you're up for the challenge, subscribe to The Piano Puzzler wherever you get your podcasts. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.